Well, this is Simon in our studio here. We've been talking too much, I know. It says it's a Trump-free zone. Let's talk about Trump. I don't like getting told what to do here. He's made a bit of a few angry comments about the Democrats, about Hillary, saying that she should accept the umpire's decision, la la la, and the votes taken place, because the Greens have come. They've got Greens in America, haven't they? The Greens have come up with some money to fund some election recounts, haven't they?
Yeah, indeed. So Trump's itchy Twitter finger has been firing off in the last few hours. Actually, he's been complaining bitterly about the Greens party led by Jill Stein, the Greens candidate for presidency, and their moves to call for a recount in the three sort of key states that gave Trump the presidency: Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And the kind of genesis of this is that there was a story last week by a bunch of computer scientists that talked about the fact that in some of those states, they thought that the election result may have able to have been hacked because of the electronic nature of some of the polling booths. Now, there's no evidence that this did occur, but it rapidly gathered steam, and Jill Stein came out and basically put out a call for funds to help fund the rather expensive legal costs that are incurred when you call for a recount. And
plenty of funds were available, weren't they? People were going, yeah, yes, yeah, let's have a recount.
Yeah, there's some talk of up to $5 million has been raised to pay for this. Initially, the Clinton camp were reluctant to sort of stick their oar in, because obviously Hillary Clinton had made noises about needing to accept the result. But now that Jill Stein, as the stalking horse, has been the one to call for the recount, they've said that they will participate, and that basically means sitting there and sending observers to watch them recount. And this has triggered Trump.
Were they electronic in the other states as well, or just Wisconsin?
Michigan doesn't have electronic voting, although Michigan's count is technically, I don't think it's been finalised, unless it's finalised at the weekend.
Yeah, they were saying that it wasn't finalised last week, weren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, indeed, although no one really doubts the result. Wisconsin and Pennsylvania do, but, you know, before anyone gets their hopes up, nobody thinks that this will change the result, because in the past, polling errors have never been enough to overcome the margin. So Trump won Pennsylvania, for example, by 70,000 votes. So it would be a remarkable event if a recount saw him over the line. But this hasn't stopped Trump from firing up. Trump's been tweeting like crazy, and saying that Clinton said she'd accept the result. And the kind of notable tweet of the last few hours has been Trump said he would have won the popular vote if it wasn't for the illegal voters. Didn't elucidate what he meant by that, but it's fascinating to see this man who has such a thin skin that can't even hold his tongue for 5 seconds. So interesting to watch this space.
Yes, exactly. I bet that Malcolm Turnbull wished that his poll results were somewhere near the Donald Trump popularity at the moment, because they're heading south at a fast rate, aren't they?
They are. Latest Fairfax poll, 51-49 in favour of Labor, and Turnbull's lost 8% more on, I think it's preferred Prime Minister. And he's not doing too well. He seems to be in a bit of a troubling place, because one of the things that the polls have indicated is a rise in third-party support. So a lot of voters are fed up with both major political parties, and we've seen a rise to 18%, I think was the number, supporting third-party either candidates or political parties. And
well, we've heard in Queensland from none other than George Brandis, who could not be more accident-prone if he tried, the LNP are very worried about Pauline Hanson's One Nation in that state for the upcoming election, aren't they?
Indeed. There was a news poll out last week, and obviously these need to be taken with a grain of salt, but that 50% or nearly 50% of respondents in that poll, I thought Pauline Hanson would do the best job as Prime Minister. So, know, we could be moving to redder pastures very, very soon in Queensland if neither political party pulls their socks up. So,
but on the other hand, it could be a very good week for the government because it looks like Michaela Cash is a little ripper for the government. She's got the registered organisations bill through. Now it looks like that with the compromise that ScoMo's just announced, 15% for the backpacker tax, that might get fixed up before the election, which will stave off a problem from George Christensen, who's going to organise some sort of filibuster until whenever, if he doesn't get his own way. to stop the tax going 32%. And, of course, there's the big one, the ABCC bill coming up. Now, rumours are this morning that Nick Xenophon could be convinced, maybe, to get this through before the end of the year.
Well, you know, he certainly has been known to turn a few coats now and then. I mean, he's certainly a political pragmatist, if nothing else, Xenophon. So he can be very difficult to read. It is interesting that, I think as Paul Keating said recently, the bar is so low that what in, if you like, normal political era would be seen as trouble for the government, inability to even get their basic bread and butter bill through the Senate, is now being cast as a great victory. Those that maybe don't know the history of the backpacker tax, it was in the Abbott hockey budget for around 32.5%. There was a sort of shambolic inquiry and noises were made that this would affect farmers. So it was dropped to 19%. And then Labor and members of the crossbench, such as Jackie Lambie, weren't happy and decided that 10.5% was the right number. And they've compromised. Well, a compromise has been reached between the government and certain members of the crossbench for 15%, with the threat that if we don't get the backpackers out to the farms, we won't have any food for Christmas.
Yeah, no food for you.
Yeah, but it is astounding that this sort of horse trading, which is somewhat of a background for the government, is being cast as a success. But equally, people may see this as the government compromising and rolling its sleeves up. So certainly with that and the ABCC bills, it'll be interesting. I mean, what is interesting is, you know, sort of for those that live in the political beltway, they may see this as a success, but for your swing voters, your marginal voters who frankly don't really give a stuff about these types of issues, I would be surprised if these matters cut through and improve the government's standing, because I think a lot of Australians frankly couldn't give a damn about backpacker taxes or the ABCC. So I'm not sure that
look, if it didn't go ahead, this was the reason for the whole, this is what sort of platform would Turnbull be standing on? Because our Prime Minister called the election because of these two things. So if he couldn't get them through, it's a bit hopeless, isn't it? I mean, it'd just be a question of time before we'd be seeing the elevation of Michaela Cash down to the lower house. And
indeed, he's a straw, the straw man that he served the election on would be even more tenuous, I suspect. But look, you know, I think we are in turbulent political waters at the moment, and both parties are grappling with how to deal with this anti-establishment, fed-up view from important. I mean, all portions of the electorate are important, but from the parts of the electorate which can swing elections either way or the other. And it's interesting to watch Turnbull, try to deal with this. Abbott came out the other day and said, innovation and agile, you know, all that talk about innovation and so on loses people. So yeah, he certainly has a
But the Terminator came out afterwards and said, no, it is always important for jobs and growth to have innovation. And so he said, no, it's still part of our platform and part of the economic recovery for the budget. And so, you know, yeah, he's definitely behind the new leader all the way.
Innovation is one of those things everybody talks about it.
Oh yeah, you got to have it. You got to have it. It's, you know, it's like a digital radio. You got to have it. Now, I was just briefly, we were talking earlier with our French expert, François Martin, and he was saying that really, Vladimir Putin is the big winner lately with all these elections. He's been supporting the right-wing parties in France. He's been supporting the right-wing parties in the Netherlands, in Germany, everywhere in Europe. And, of course, it is rumoured that he did also help Trump out a little bit with some of his businesses or whatever. We're not quite sure. Might find out very soon. Do you think there's anybody in Australia that he's been helping out, you know? Any other people that are in there he might have been helping
rise
out?
Rise up Australia. Who knows? I mean, I think maybe ask your local member if they have, have a bit of a thing for borscht or vodka, and that might signal
whether or not
they've been courted by the Russian embassy. I mean, it is interesting. I mean, actually, those interested, Russia does have a history of involvement in Australian politics during the Cold War, of course. So, and Russia was actually the first nation to visit the settlement here in Sydney at Port Jackson, I think, just after 1788. It was the first official visit, I believe. So,
yeah, and then we built Fort Denison, yeah. So,
yeah, indeed, I think Kirby
keep them out.
I think was known as Russian Point, I think, for a while. So, Who knows?
Yeah. Anyway, look, Elijah, thank you again for giving us your time here on the Daily, on the Monday Daily with me, Roderick Chambers. So thank you so much for coming on again. And we hope to talk to you again next week. Get an update.
Thanks very much.
All right. Cheers.